And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website, podcastufo.com, for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. We're starting an hour late this evening to accommodate the guest, but we're pretty excited to have him on. It's MJ Banyas, and he's going to be talking about basically philosophy and UFOs. And he has a lot of really good points. And I have a lot of questions as far as this goes, so I'm pretty excited to have him on. Before that, we have Alejandro Rojas coming right up live with the news. I want to thank everyone that supports the show. And if you are not able to support the show and want to listen to the full show, you can always listen to it live. And it's usually at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that's on Podcast UFO. It's also on our YouTube channel. If you want to subscribe to our mailing list, you can see who our upcoming guests are. We send out a newsletter once a week. And that's right on podcastufo.com. You just put your email address in there, and that's it. And also, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel and see when that is, when shows are happening. We also have the Everything Else show. It's going to be on Monday nights, not every Monday night, but on Monday nights. And this one coming up is on Lake Monsters. So that should be pretty interesting with Denver Michaels. And also, if you can't support the show and you want to listen to the full show, it's on the Dark Matter Digital Network, and that's every Thursday night at 10 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. Alejandro, how are you?
I am good.
Thanks.
So can people see me the whole time
since, no.
You know, I'm on the video?
No.
Just now. So I just came on. Hello, everybody.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't do that to me. I wouldn't do that to you.
Well, that would be, you're good at awkward, and that would be really awkward, because it feels kind of awkward. You're waiting here, and you see yourself, and you're like, am I on? Can people see me kind of?
Yeah. No, I'll do that next time, though.
Yeah.
So how you doing?
I am doing well, not too bad. Busy, busy, but doing good.
I know last week we mentioned, of course, we had a crash last week. And what had happened, to let the people know why we didn't have a show, is we tried to go on. You were on the show, but no one could hear you, or they heard like every fourth word or something like that. It ended up being my YouTube software for streaming was trying to upload a new version, so update, and it just kept, I guess it was just attempting to, so it wasn't working properly. So I apologize to the listeners for no show last week. But anyway, the exciting news that you told everyone is that you and your girlfriend now own the UFO Congress. And congratulations. All right. Yeah, that was
kidding.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So, yes, that's true. And actually, I think this is the third time we've talked about it, but the show keeps getting messed up or something, but or just not available. But yes, it's been a while now, so that's what's keeping me really busy, although I've always been busy with the UFO Congress because I've been running it for years now. But really excited about it. We now are running everything, but people really won't see any changes. It'll be all of the same. I still work for openminds.tv. We're still going to be talking about openminds.tv news. And Open Minds is still a big part of the whole thing. So, yeah, really, it doesn't change too much for people, but it's exciting
right.
for us.
And can you talk about any of the guest speakers you have lined up?
Yeah, so let's see. We've got a couple people that we have. Okay, let's see. I've got about four posted right now that we have public. We have a lot more that we're working on. But one of those is the return of Steve Bassett, so that'll be fun. He's been in Europe for a while. He essentially I think, you know, after the election, he actually, you know, a lot of people threatened to leave the country, and he actually did it. And so he hasn't been around too much in the U.S., but he is coming back for the conference, so it ought to be interesting to hear from him because, you know, we haven't heard from him for a while, and he has a lot of stories to share about his efforts out there. Otherwise, we're going to have Bryce Zabel, and this is exciting. Have you had him on the show? Oh, you haven't had Bryce Zabel. So Bryce used to run the Academy Awards for a period of time, but before that he was a CNN anchor, and then he was also, but mostly he's worked in movies. So he's produced a lot of stuff. What was the name? Dark Skies, that television program, was mostly him. Like, it was his idea, and he got that done. But he's working on a couple movies right now. One called, like, The Majestic Men or something like that, they're going to call it, with essentially around Don Schmidt and Stan Friedman. That's who it's going to be about. They're going to have actors playing them. And then he's also working on a movie for Betty Hill and on the Betty Hill case. And these have been green-lighted already. So he's working on these projects right now, big budgets, you know, Hollywood type of deals. So he's going to be there. Really cool guy. I've known him for years. We're going to also have Jennifer Stein. She was supposed to be there last year, but she had a family emergency and couldn't make it. So she's going to talk about crop circles. I haven't seen this talk that she's going to do, but everybody who has seen it says it's going to be great. And the other person we're going to have is T.L. Keller. And he's interesting because he is an aerospace engineer. That's where he spent most of his life. So he's going to be talking about UFOs, an interest that he's had. He's also going to be talking about, you know, are there theirs or ours, the potential that some of these are black projects, that sort of thing, from his perspective as an engineer.
Great. Okay, well, that's a good little preview there. And I know February is a long way away, but I already booked the hotel rooms. That's all done. I'm excited to come out this year, and hopefully a storm will not keep me away like last year.
No.
So what's going on for UFO news?
UFO news. Well, I want to talk about this news. This is a story I wrote recently, although it's kind of old news, but I don't think it's anything we've talked about. Old news for us, maybe, because, you know, for us, a week is old news. But a couple of these stories that came out recently and we haven't talked about, which is NASA hiring a planetary protection officer and also the U.S. Air Force seeking funding for a space corps. So these are interesting and they're kind of related in that. The Planetary Protection Officer position, of course, everybody got excited. Is this going to be a position where they're, you know, keeping UFOs away or looking for aliens and that sort of thing? That's what the headlines were, and that's what everybody assumed. But that's not really what it was. The Space Corps is the same kind of thing. Everybody's, you know, the headlines were having fun with it. Are they going to be fighting aliens or something like this? But no, that's not the case. So the Planetary Protection Officer, that posting went out for NASA, and people got excited. It got in the headlines, and a 9-year-old boy actually applied for it. He says he watches Guardian of the Galaxies. You know, he watches all of the alien shows, and he thinks he would do a good job. So NASA replied, and I think they used this reply to this kid as a vehicle to kind of clarify what this job is, even though it says it in very technical terms in the job posting, which is really... This person is in charge of, like, procedures for decontamination. So when we bring stuff back from the moon or when we go to other planets to make sure that we're not contaminating other planets and that sort of thing. So that's what this position is. They've actually had it since the 60s. So with all this new secret space stuff that's been in the, you know, people talking about, has nothing to do with anything like that. It's more of a kind of a boring job, and it's kind of funny. If anybody saw Alien Covenant, they definitely could have used some of these protocols when the space colonists went flying out there. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. The Space Corps. Now, this actually was passed by the House to fund a Space Corps for the United States Air Force, and, you know, it sounds exciting. But, and it is maybe somewhat exciting, but it's mostly around space. It is space warfare, but it's in competition, you know, technologically with the Chinese and the Russians. So this is looking for different sort of space weapons in space. How do we create them? How do we keep the Russians and the Chinese from doing that? Really, the technology at this point is where we have, like, or at least the Chinese have, like, you know, satellite jammers that can jam the communication from the satellite coming to Earth. That's the kind of area they're looking at now. We really don't have anything that can take out satellites. So they're practicing these sort of things all the time, lasers and other things that they can try to take out, like literally destroy them or just make them inoperable. So that's kind of what they were looking at doing. Essentially, it got to the Senate. The White House kind of laughed it off and said, hey, we're way too premature to do this. However, so it's probably not going to pass. But we do already have a Space Command, and the Space Command does similar things like this. It's a U.S. Air Force Space Command. They are in charge of those satellites that are out there. But they're also in charge of some of these, you know, a lot of secret projects. Who knows what's going on? But, you know, as I've shared, I'm skeptical of this whole space fleet kind of idea. But we have seen in the news lately of this little kind of tiny unmanned space shuttle that the Air Force has, and it is ran by Space Command, and it flies secret projects. In fact, it was in space for like a full year flying Wow. around. They haven't revealed what it was doing, but they have shown pictures of the object or of this craft and everything. So they've kind of even, you know, told everybody, hey, we've got this craft, but we're not going to tell you what it's doing. It's probably taking pictures and stuff like that. But yeah, so that's if people were wondering, what about these space corps? And I have had some questions recently, you know, what about these crazy NASA and Air Force space corps soldiers and warfare and fighting that they're trying to hire people for? You know, that's been blown out of proportion a little bit. This is what they really are all about.
Hey, someone in the chat room wanted to know what your thoughts were on the recent MOD release of files.
Well, there were a few MOD files released, not a whole lot. I think there was something like 8, although there's supposed to be 13, so there's still some that haven't been released. It was frustrating that it took them so long. They were supposed to release these a couple years ago, and they said they were going to, but they got delayed by a couple years. But it doesn't have, and Nick Pope, you know, I've interviewed him, maybe you have too, about, you know, what was going to be in those files and some of those files that may be of interest. And he said there's no smoking gun in them, and there isn't. There are a couple interesting cases, but that's about all. So we've got some links, and we've been posting news on some of those interesting cases. And maybe I'll compile a story about, you know, what they have, what they all have. What was frustrating about these files, though, was that in the past when the UK Military of Defense or their archives have released these UFO files, they've shared them with the public digitally so you could download them. And they make them free for a month, and then you have to pay it for them after that. And in the UK, it's different. In the US, you know, anything that the government creates, we can use. It's public domain for us. In the UK, it's different. They have copyright over them, so you can't use them without the permission of the UK government or paying them to use them. So, but what they did with these files is you could only get them by going to the National Archives outside of London in the UK to get these files. So you had to go get them print, you know, photocopy them, and then you can take them with you. But that was the only way you could get them. So, you know, Nick Pope talked about this was probably because they didn't want them to make as much news as they have in the past. But Nick was intent on making them news anyway, and he did a good job of it because he did interviews with a lot of the different news outlets in the UK and some here on those files. But other than that, you know, some of the local tabloids did some stories on them, but just nothing too exciting on those files. But yeah, some new ones did come out, but we're awaiting 3 or 4 more, and it is curious why they didn't release them all at once and why they've taken so long to release these files and why they've only made them available physically instead of making them available digitally as they have in
right.
the past.
Yeah, that is really strange why they have held back after all this time, and it makes you wonder why they would hold out even any at all if they were releasing, you know, which is, it's just strange.
Yeah. It is kind of strange behavior.
I mean, if there was like thousands, I could understand them releasing, you know, 2,000 and still 1,000 left. But, I mean, if there's just a few left, that is strange to me.
It is strange. And John Burroughs was the one who called him out on it because he knew these files existed. And he requested these files. He wanted to see them. And they told him to wait because we're going to release them all. This was prior to 2008. They ended up releasing all the files, and these files weren't in there. So Burroughs kept, you know, telling him, hey, we want these files. And they kind of ignored him. But finally, some British citizens read some of the stories that he had written. And so they followed up with requests, their version of the Freedom of Information Act requests. And then finally, they said we would release them. This was all the way back, you know. This was 2014, I think, and it's taken him this long to get out. John Burroughs being one of the witnesses at the Rendlesham Forest, you know, a U.S. serviceman who had a sighting on a base that was leased to the U.S. In the U.K. back in 1980, and he felt he had some physiological effects, and that's why he was interested in it.
Any sightings this over this last week or so?
Yeah, definitely. Have some pretty interesting ones. This one I like just because it is similar to what a lot of people see. And this is a point of light that people, you know, a lot of people will report. I think, you know, this is the most that I've heard. And this term is used the most, zigzagging, where there'll be a point of light, kind of like a satellite moving across, and then it zigzags around and flies off. A lot of people report this sort of thing. And this report is similar. This was at Ormond by the Sea in Florida. This was just on August 10th, where this gentleman who calls himself a military brat, and he served 14 years himself in the Army, he and his wife were out just kind of enjoying the ocean in Florida and enjoying the sunset when they saw something like this. They saw a light that just kind of zigzagged around and flew off. It's an interesting case. He kind of drew what it looked like, but I just felt it was kind of interesting because he's in the military. You know, it really baffled him. And I think that a lot of people will, you know, feel that they've seen something similar because this is a very common report. But he also did make a graphic of essentially the movements of this object that you can see on the report as well. And then another one for people who like videos, because everybody's complaining, oh, why wouldn't, you know, why doesn't that UFO sighting have a video or a picture? Well, some of them do, but as you'll see in this sighting, they don't always add a lot of information. But it is kind of weird, and I don't know if you looked at this one, Martin. This one's from Brazil.
Oh, I saw that, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird video. It's from August 6th, actually 2017, when this person saw what looked like just two objects kind of flying together. One of them faded out, and one of them was still there. He was able to get a picture of this with his phone, and it's just an odd shape. It's kind of like there's a kind of fish that kind of has like a similar kind of shape. Look at this. I can actually kind of show people who are watching the YouTube from my phone. Look at that weird shape. What the heck is that? And you could see that flying along in this video. It's a short video. It's not that great of a video, but it was kind of interesting. It was kind of cool because what this guy did was also zoom in on an aircraft to just show, you know, how well his phone could zoom as, you know, to show the relationship. But, yeah, I don't know what that was. That was kind of a weird one. So people can check that out, watch the video and see what they
Excellent.
Think.
All right, Alejandro. Well, we'll be seeing you next week. At the regular time.
We'll
thanks
week.
For
thanks
for coming in late on this one.
Yeah, no problem. And just remind people they can find this at openminds.tv, all the stories we
That's
talked
right.
about.
That's right. All right. Take care. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
Bye.
See ya.
I can't hang you up. You're going to have to. All right. So.
What if I don't?
Then you can join us for the show.
MJ is great. But I'll let
All
you
right.
talk to him.
Take care. All right. So our guest, MJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much
yes.
for having me.
I'm real excited to talk to you. I think a lot of what people think about UFOs is all based on philosophy, because we certainly don't have, you know, we certainly don't have any evidence. And so this is what, first of all, before we get into anything, what sparked your thoughts on this whole situation?
I think, you know, I sort of come at it from, you know, the way most of us do growing up. You know, you sort of watch, you know, a lot of the UFO shows and, you know, X-Files and Star Trek and all that. So, you know, as a kid growing up, I really enjoyed sort of science fiction and you know, the idea and the possibility of life elsewhere in the universe as a sort of a subject. In university, I studied critical theory, which is sort of my academic background. And critical theory is basically sort of cultural philosophy. We talk about primarily sort of popular culture, mainstream culture, and how and why we sort of live our lives, you know, day to day. And my focus in university was on subcultures. I really enjoyed talking about why certain people sort of congregate and discuss certain sort of specific things that are generally not considered normal or mainstream or popular. And over the years, I sort of realized that UFO culture, or UFO subculture, or the UFO community, sometimes we call it, is something that's very interesting. It's an interesting group of people to look at. And as I sort of started looking into a little more, I became interested, and I sort of, I guess, unofficially joined it, became a MUFON field investigator for a while, and, you know, really just got into the subject, got into the community, and ever since it's kind of just like a train gone off the rails and into, you know, I can't stop it now, and it's out of control. But, you know, to go back to your sort of your initial point, it doesn't take long for someone who walks into the UFO culture to see that, you know, we've been kind of running over the same old ground, and the science has been running over the same old ground and has ultimately solved nothing. You know, 70 years in, if we sort of state as 1947 being sort of the unofficial start of UFOs, or at least popular ufology, you know, nothing's really been solved. Like you say, there's no evidence. So I think we need to approach the UFO question from a different standpoint, and I think science is definitely one sort of aspect of it, but definitely philosophy and theory and culture studies and other disciplines definitely need to get themselves involved if we're ever going to sort of come to some sort of conclusion.
When you were a field investigator for MUFON, did you investigate any cases that you thought were baffling, that thought there was really something to this?
I think ultimately, you know, in my entire career, and it wasn't long, I have to be honest, I was only in MUFON for about 2.5 years. My plan was to stay longer. However, just sort of due to political reasons and the political climate of MUFON sort of over the last couple months, I'm sure, you know, most of your audience remembers sort of the debacles that occurred sort of in a row for MUFON. I decided that, you know, MUFON is an organization that I can no longer be a part of, sort of just personally, as well as just sort of what I personally believe as a person. Personally believe as a person, that sounds silly. What I personally believe as just a human being on this planet who doesn't want to be involved with sort of certain people, and I guess due to politics have to remain in positions within the organization. I also have philosophical problems, I think, with MUFON making claims that it's a scientific body, meanwhile hosting symposiums concerning topics that are not at all scientific, and are completely speculative, with little evidence to support them, if any. So, you know, I had my separation with MUFON. Overall, to answer your question, there was one case that I sort of listed as an unknown, only because I could not figure out in any way, like I couldn't disprove it, that what the sighting was. So I did list it as an unknown. I did sort of put a caveat in there saying that, you know, I doubt this is something that is, you know, otherworldly. But it was definitely something I couldn't explain. It was definitely something that as I sort of did the research and, you know, looked at all of the data out there, flight patterns, you know, meteorological events, talking to the witnesses, there were two of them. You know, as far as I know, they saw what they saw. So that was an interesting case for sure. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, the French had a report. I'm trying to remember the name of the report on UFOs. You know which one I'm talking about?
The one that yes, McCain right. talked about?
Yeah. It's
slipped my mind right now.
My mind. But Leslie did, you know, the only reason she got involved in UFOs, I'm sure you know, is because of this report. She read the report and thought, wow, if this is, the extraterrestrial theory is their best, you know, their best guess of what is going on, and team of scientists. And, what do you think about that report? You know, the thing that I've heard you say in another interview, and I agree with you, is that people do jump right on the bandwagon that everything's extraterrestrial.
Right.
So what do you think about her, getting involved in this because of that report?
Sure. You know, I have nothing but respect for Leslie Kane. I think she's definitely coming to this. And she's definitely someone who I think, you know, the UFO community needs. She's definitely very bright, and she's definitely a good researcher. I think if we sort of, the core of the question here is, you know, the ETH, right, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and why has the extraterrestrial hypothesis become the go-to position for people within the UFO community, most people within the UFO community. There's definitely people who sort of disagree with it. And this is an interesting question. You know, I fundamentally don't know why extraterrestrials have become this sort of standard idea by which we say, you know, if UFOs are intelligently controlled, they must be piloted then by, you know, beings like you and I. They're just maybe smarter and they look different and they have better technology that seems magical to us. But, we tend to fall back on this. And I have to be honest, I think primarily it's a cultural thing. I think primarily we believe, the UFO community in general believes in extraterrestrials because we've been fed that story for a long time. Star Trek, Star Wars, The X-Files, Alien, all of these sort of films and TV shows that have constantly kind of reinforced this idea, even into earlier, the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, you know, there were the comics and the radio shows talking about, you know, space aliens. So this idea of beings from other planets is something that you and I can easily kind of talk about. We can talk about it easily because they're like you and me, right? We kind of can approach the ETH because you and I are, you know, made of meat, and we have free will and agency just like they do, and we have technology just like they do, and we are starting to go out into space, and they've been doing it for, you know, like, it's easy for us to comprehend something else like us, like ourselves. However, there's a lot of people, especially now, especially younger UFO researchers, who are looking at the UFO question not from sort of the place of extraterrestrials, but rather from something else. Something strange, and I've said this before, I believe something strange is going on. What that strange is, I have no idea. But it definitely, when you look at the evidence, and you look at sort of all evidence equally, and that's hard to do sometimes because we often approach UFO cases from kind of our own ideological baggage, right? Some stuff sounds okay. Some stuff sounds totally nuts and we shouldn't believe, right? If we kind of look at it all evenly, the ETH doesn't fit. It doesn't fit at all. There's so many moments of high strangeness that don't jive. Why do we believe that it's a species of aliens or maybe a dozen species of aliens kind of doing stuff? It doesn't make sense. Like I said, right, I've talked about this many times before in various blog posts, as well as on other interviews. I think we approach the UFO question from the ETH from culture, but I think it's illegitimate.
Well, I tend to think that they're at least part of it. I have said on the show a number of times that, it may be perhaps the UFOs are something we haven't even thought of yet or, you know, can't even imagine, you know. And I think, that's definitely a possibility. But I also think of it, yes, I understand where you're coming from. And you probably get a lot of people in ufology kind of hammering you because of your thoughts about this, I can imagine possibly, but we can talk about that. But I do think it's possible that at least some of the UFOs could be visiting us. I think it makes sense. But I also realize that we can't help but put ourselves, humanize what is going on. You know, that's the problem. We always think like, well, we would do it, so why wouldn't they do it? And, you know, if something develops on in a different solar system or whatever, you know, millions of years ahead of us, who knows what their way of thinking and acting, you know, are. Maybe they can't even conceive of what we conceive of.
Yeah, this comes up often, right? This comes up often in the UFO narrative, where you have these beings, and they're very similar to you and I, right? They're so similar, in fact, that we sort of have stories of hybridization, and we have stories of, sexual encounters between humans and, you know, these others, whatever they are. Not only that, you know, we often approach them in sort of human ethical terms, right? You know, we say that they're either peaceful or malevolent. We even differentiate between the experiences we have with them, right? We differentiate a contact experience, which is usually benign, peaceful. They're here to impart a message upon someone. This is a contact moment. And then we have an abduction experience, right? This is the negative. This is when we view them as evil beings. They're malevolent. They're here to test us, and they're here to prod us and poke us and do sort of horrible things. And we apply this very human ethical system to something that isn't human. And fundamentally, we need to ask ourselves, why is this? Furthermore, you know, we need to understand, I think, that a lot of our anxieties, a lot of our fears, sort of as a culture, we place upon them, whatever they are, the other, the alien, or, you know, the intelligent sort of beings that are often showing up in the narrative, because they often come to us with sort of very human messages, right? And this has been happening since, you know, again, the dawn of ufology with, you know, Adamski and all those guys. They've been talking about space brothers and peace, love, and saving the planet from nuclear bombs and global warming for a long time. And a lot of this narrative sort of hasn't changed. And maybe it's because we haven't changed and we're still sort of afraid of those things. But it makes you wonder why they would potentially sort of care about sort of those ideas. And furthermore, that they can even talk to us about those ideas. You know, we make a lot of logical leaps and a lot of assumptions that they can even communicate with us, that our brains can even jive in some sort of communicative sort of language or telepathy or whatever, to suggest that they are going to be anything like us is, again, you know, very speculative. And again, if we go to the witnesses, it's the witnesses' sort of stories that create this narrative. It's not that the witnesses are lying, and it's not that they're delusional. They are probably very much having real experiences. However, we have to remember that it's people interpreting experiences. And humans have this sort of safety switch that kind of whenever we experience anything, we always interpret it in a way that makes sense to us, right? We always try to make everything make sense to us. And this is perfectly normal.
It's evolution,
sort of
actually.
Safety, yeah. It literally is, yeah. I mean, you know, we're designed to see certain things. We're designed to understand certain things in certain ways so, you know, we don't die. And we often, I think, place our ideological selves upon these beings, whatever they are, and to suggest that they can easily communicate with us, or anything, that they're even like us in any way, I think that is just sort of human interpretation being placed upon them, whatever they are. And this is why, again, I have problems with the extraterrestrial hypothesis, because if they were just people like you and I flying around the galaxy, they wouldn't really function like you and I. They would be totally different, follow a completely separate evolutionary path on a totally separate evolutionary lineage and plant, like, you know, to suggest that they're, you know, reptiles, for example, in one narrative, right? The reptilians or whatever. That's crazy. I mean, how do you know there's reptiles on other planets? You know what I mean? Like, when reptiles evolved on Earth, they did not necessarily evolve anywhere else in the cosmos. So again, you know, it's these logical leaps the UFO community kind of takes. And yeah, I do definitely get flack for it. I'm sure I'll get a couple interesting comments on this
Well, podcast. We can actually, in the second hour, I'm going to, you know, toward the end, I'm going to ask if anyone wants to call in, and so they can do that.
Great.
Yeah, it should be interesting if we get some calls. So one of the cases I think is totally amazing, and a friend of mine is creating a film on it, is the Ariel School, the Rua, Zimbabwe. Mm. That particular case is really something. And how would you think you would interpret what those children saw in any other way, you know, in a different way?
Right. Well, I think, you know, and again, I know a bit about the case, and I've heard that one of the overarching problems, I guess, with the case, and this is what the debunkers have said, I'm not necessarily agreeing with them, I'm just sort of restating what they've stated, is that some of the descriptions of what occurred and the entities or whatever weren't sort of the same across the board, right? There were variations in the testimony of the kids. So this leads me to believe sort of, and this should lead anyone to believe one of two things. One, they didn't make it up, but they sort of imagined it, and that's why there's variation in the story. Or two, something did happen, something legitimately happened, but the children interpreted what occurred, where they came from, their ideological backgrounds, interpreted what occurred differently based upon them, right? Very similarly to, you know, I'm sure some of your audience has seen the film The Arrival.
Yes.
Certain,
that was really good.
Certain characters in the film interpret the heptapods in one way, and some interpret them in the other way. And the one who sort of interprets them the best, played by Amy Adams, you know, she learns to speak their language, and she sort of sees them, I suppose, for what they actually are, right? She can sort of move past the illusion of the heptapod. You know, I think potentially in this Ariel case in Zimbabwe, I think what you have is an anomalous event, and I think you have a group of people who approach that event from their own sort of personal backgrounds and from their own ideological place and interpret it differently. So I think for me personally, this is why you have a variation of what occurred or what they saw. And we see this in the UFO narrative all the time. You have thousands and thousands and thousands of abduction cases involving the Greys. You also have thousands of, you know, UFO cases where people, you know, see giant owls and bunny rabbits and 8-foot giant beings with horns and goblins. I mean, you know, you have this insane variation of UFO testimony. To suggest that it's extraterrestrials is difficult, because ultimately what's going on with the extraterrestrials? How come sometimes they look like grays? How come sometimes they look like owls? How come sometimes they look, they're 8 feet tall? And, you know, ultimately what occurs is you either have to then say, well, there's hundreds of races visiting Earth, hundreds and hundreds, because they all fly different ships too. And in the 1800s, they flew airships, you know, made out of hydrogen, and they spoke English, and they needed water and gasoline to fly them. And, you know, in the 1950s, they had saucers, and in the 90s, they had triangles. So, you know, ultimately, what's going on if it's extraterrestrials? I personally think it's something else. I personally think we're dealing with something intelligent. I think we're dealing with some sort of strange phenomenon, but our personal interpretation of it is what makes it sort of real. It's what gives it shape. And the kids in Zimbabwe, I think this is what happened. I think they fundamentally saw something anomalous, something strange happened, and they interpreted in their own way.
Well, it'll be really interesting when Randy gets that film completed, because it'll, you know, what he's basically done is interviewed these kids again today, you know, in their 20s. And actually, I'm going to have one of them on the show with him coming up. I've already met awesome. Emily, and she gave a talk out at the Phoenix UFO Congress 2 years ago, I guess it was, and actually brought a lot of people to tears because it was such an emotional, you know, situation for her. What will be really interesting is to see the film when it's completed and hear all all what has happened to their lives as they moved on and what they actually think about and the differences in what each of them say about what happened that day. One of the things I think is really interesting, and for young children to come up with this on their own is kind of bizarre, is a few of them were saying that, you know, the thoughts that they had to do with us taking care of the earth, you know, that bad things can happen to the earth if we don't take care of it. And you do hear that a lot, you know, but for a young child to say that would to just make that up would be very, very strange. So
I agree. And I don't necessarily think anything was made up. I honestly think sort of the events in Zimbabwe, like I said, something did happen. I'm just not sure if it was, you know, aliens from another planet. And I think that's kind of where maybe I deviate a bit from sort of some of the others within the UFO community. Uh-huh.
You know, the old saying, I know what I saw, you know, type of thing. You know, I had a sighting that, you know, I don't think could be explained, you know, back in 2006 in Monterey, in the Monterey area. I was in Carmel Valley, California. But also, the one way it could be explained is that, you know, it could be something, it could have been something military, although it was a perfectly shaped round disc. And the thing that astonished me the most about the whole entire sighting, and I had never heard anyone else say this, is that the thing was moving without making any sound. So when I say I know what I saw, but I don't know if it was extraterrestrial. I have no idea what it was, but I certainly know that I saw something. What do you think people are seeing? What are your thoughts on that? If you don't think it's extraterrestrial.
So we're getting to the core of it now, are we? perfect. You know, personally, I don't know. I can't answer your question. You know, I have to go with. Let me start over here. I think I have to start with I don't know, and the main reason for that is because anyone who's sort of within the UFO community says this is exactly what's going on 100% is either delusional or trying to sell you something. And that's across the board, right? If they say, I know exactly what's going on and here's what it is, your BS meter should be going through the roof. So let's start there. So anyone who thinks they know what's going on, you can visit my website. No, anyway, I think what we're dealing with, and this is, again, personal opinion. I'm not an expert. I don't know. All I have behind me to support me in this is what the witnesses say, and the fact that what the witnesses say doesn't always jive. The fact that the significant pile of evidence out there, sighting reports especially, and witness encounters that do not fit in with the extraterrestrial hypothesis. So I'm kind of going on pure witness reports, and I'm weighing them evenly. I'm not, you know, there's going to be hoaxes and there's going to be people who are delusional. There's always going to be that. But you still have a huge chunk, a huge core of people who have had strange experiences, and they do not sort of coalesce into this nice, tidy package of it's ET. I think what we're dealing with is something that, you know, we've potentially as a species have been dealing with for a long time. I made a joke to someone once. I've become, you know, Jungian in my old age. I believe that what we have sort of have been dealing with for a long time is what Carl Jung has often described as a sort of a universal consciousness, a sort of an intelligence that exists within our collective minds as a species. We are all sort of part of the same tapestry. And there are other things within this tapestry that also exist. They're not necessarily evil. They're not necessarily good. They just exist. When we interact with these things, whatever they are, our own sort of concepts of good and bad, our own concepts of right and wrong, our own ideological background is what makes them real. They're sort of out there. We give them, physical presence, and we give them the ability to interact with us. we see this sort of in a couple ways. Jung often talks about in his psychology the idea of archetypes, the fact that it doesn't matter whether you were born in North America or whether you were born in the Middle East or in Africa or wherever, and it doesn't matter if these cultures were born thousands of years ago or these people were born thousands of years ago or they're born today. We all have a fundamental understanding of sort of messages and ideologies. The good guys are always sort of similar. The bad guys are always sort of similar. We also interpret things differently. We always interpret things similarly. Certain animals we often interpret as being wise or good or evil or symbols of death or whatever. And this is sort of universal. This is a universal idea, this idea of the archetype. And Jung often talks about that the reason why these archetypes are all similar for everyone on this planet is because we're all sort of tied in together. There is something that's binding us together, some sort of consciousness. And like I've said sort of just now, there is something present within this consciousness. Like I said, it has some sort of intelligence, and when we interact with it, it sort of comes forward in some way. It's not necessarily extraterrestrial. It's not from another planet. It's just not human. And I think that this is sort of what we're dealing with. And philosophers have been talking about this for a long time. This isn't new. Aristotle talked about this thousands and thousands of years ago. So, you know, we're not dealing with anything strange or new in the philosophical world. But I think in the UFO world, I think this, you know, Jung kind of brought it up, and I think it hasn't really gotten the same traction that the ETH has. And that's why the ETH is definitely sort of the popular discourse right now.
Do you think this sort of ties in with other paranormal events? I have a friend, Paulino, who talks about sort of the multiverse, you know, having something right. to do with like crossovers and things like that. And this is interesting what you're saying, you know, about a not human.
Right. You know, and I think that this often comes up, right? This often comes up with, you know, the UFO question. And we often, you know, we often lump UFOs in with, you know, ghosts and Bigfoot and cryptozoology and all these other things. And there's definitely a lot of people within the UFO community who sort of buy into this, this idea that it's all connected. You know, I'm not sure. Again, I can't speak for it because I don't necessarily know what this thing is. This is just a sort of a personal opinion that I come to sort of via reading and research. You know, being human, I'm sure my opinion will probably change, you know, within a few years because I bump into some other piece of evidence that blows my mind and suddenly, you know, it's aliens, you know. you know, I don't know. I hesitate to say sort of it's all linked together sort of with paranormal stuff. Do I think humans have been interacting with this intelligence, whatever it is, for a long time? Yes. Is it sort of ancient aliens, that type of, they built the pyramids? No, I don't think it's that. I think it's more when humans have strange moments happen to them, anomalous events, strange synchronicities, when we have odd experiences of deja vu, or we think something's watching us, or we have moments where we believe we're like you say, being visited, you know, by something. I think this is what that intelligence is. I think that's what we're interacting with. A UFO sighting is simply our interpretation of that intelligence from our cultural standpoint. 500 years ago, people didn't see, you know, black triangle UFOs flying through the sky and extraterrestrials with needles and strange devices, you know, technological devices. They would have seen something else. They would have seen fairies, or they would have seen, you know, elves, or they would have seen, you know, some other creatures that they would have been able to explain via their own sort of ideological and cultural and social background. Today, you know, we live in the 21st century. You know, we see you know, flying discs and stuff like that, because we come from that cultural place. Nobody sees fairies anymore, really. Nobody sees elves anymore, really. More people have UFO sightings than probably any other sighting of any other paranormal or sort of anomalous thing. I think there's probably more UFO sightings than Bigfoot sightings. So I think we're just sort of approaching this intelligence from our own place, and we're placing our interpretation upon it and making it seem real or making it seem physical, like a flying saucer or a black triangle or an alien or a gray or a reptilian or whatever. And I think we just come from are in place and we place it upon that.
Are there studies that are following along this line, your line of thinking? Are people doing any type of study? Because this would be a big deal, you know?
Yeah, you know, Jacques Vallée sort of does go on this route, right? He would argue, he's sort of, I think, one of the biggest proponents of this case, that it's not extraterrestrials. Jacques Vallée would probably say it's something that's been around for a long time that we've been dealing with, and he often links the UFO situation to sort of ancient cases of, like I said, elves and fairies and you know, goblins and whatever that people used to experience. When it comes to actual sort of scientific cases, you know, I'm not sure what you can scientifically track here, because ultimately, how do you prove any of this? How do you go about and test for this? One thing I'll say is there's one gentleman by the name of Jeff Ritzman. He writes a great blog. You can Google him, Jeff Ritzman, and he has a project called Project Oculus. And what he's basically done is he believes sort of, he doesn't necessarily believe what I believe, but he sort of believes, I think, that it's not extraterrestrials, it's something else. And what he's basically done is he's wired his entire house with cameras. And he purposefully places himself in sort of these marginal states. He makes himself uncomfortable. He throws off his schedule purposefully, so he wakes up at odd hours. And he doesn't get proper night's sleep, and he does all these strange things to keep his life off balance. And what he believes is if you keep your life off balance, if you don't live by sort of a steady, you know, 9-to-5 kind of grind, you are more open to having anomalous experiences. So what he's done is he's purposely placed himself in this sort of lifestyle, and then he's basically recording his whole life on camera inside his home. And he's caught some interesting, you know, anomalous things inside his own home. And I think, you know, you can go to his website and you can just, it's like I said, you can Google Jeff Ritzman or you can Google Project Oculus, and you can definitely see some of his evidence that he's picked up. But it's an interesting idea, because what it does is it sort of flies in the face of the extraterrestrial hypothesis. An extraterrestrial being or an extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, wouldn't care whether you're uncomfortable or whether you're comfortable in your daily life. They would simply go about their business and you would go about yours. And if the two of you bumped into each other, you know, that's the way it happens. Ritzman doesn't necessarily believe this, and Project Oculus is attempting to kind of prove this in a sense, this idea that people who place themselves or people who are in these sort of marginal, uncomfortable states have more experiences with anomalous activity. It's not necessarily flying saucers and UFOs, but it's a whole bunch of other stuff as well. It ties in UFOs for sure, but it also ties in other paranormal phenomena. So I think this is sort of one of the few things that's actually happening sort of to try and be objective. I think this is more of a philosophical project for me than it is a scientific one. I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination. All I have is sort of rationality and logic and reasoning behind me. And unfortunately, you know, for me, the ETH doesn't stack up. However, sort of this idea of an other intelligence out there, not necessarily alien, but just something, does.
Mm-hmm. I know there's been a couple of studies with abductees through the Free Foundation, or now it's called the Edgar Mitchell Foundation, as well as Kathy, Kathleen Martin? Yes.
Yeah.
And Denise Stoner, they've also done some studies on the commonalities of these people that have been, you know, claimed to have been abducted. And I'm wondering, I'll have to speak with Kathy and find out if what you're talking about, a disruptive life, I wonder if that's part of what's going on with the commonality of them.
You know, potentially it could be. I don't know much about, you know, the Edgar Mitchell Foundation, and I've heard of Kathleen Martin, but I don't really know. Like I've heard of her, but I've never really read much of her work. I think what I don't want to sort of interpret things and sort of purposefully sort of, you know, derail the conversation, but ultimately, again, I get sort of icky feelings when people sort of, again, make claims to know things. And say this is 100% what's going on, and then sort of try and sell it to me. So, you know, I'm going to sort of reserve judgment on this. Like I said, you know, my theory or sort of my belief is just that. It's a theory and a belief. And I'm trying to kind of figure out ways of proving it. But again, you know, the beauty of being sort of a philosopher and not a scientist is I can change my mind really anytime because I can just compartmentalize my own sort of existence and my own thoughts and sort of philosophize in different directions. Like I said, I don't know enough about their work to sort of go much further than just saying that. It, you know, if their work is free and their work is just sort of here's all of our information, have at it, perfect.
Yeah, that's basically what they're doing. What they wanted to do was anonymously track all the information to see what was in common with these people that were claiming.
Right.
And you know, my only question is I wonder what if they had. Say less than, you know, the normal sleep or, you know, right. If they were disrupted in other ways, you know, because you do hear about, you know, my son has insomnia a lot and he's had times where he's had not night terrors, but he'll have where he can't move and, you know, he'll think he sees something, you know, at the foot of the bed.
Yeah.
You know, that's similar to, I'm not saying that's what these people that are claimed to be abducted are having, but that is something that does happen when you, you know, when you deprive yourself from sleep.
Of course. And again, this is, you know, ancient, right? Like humans have been having this problem for a long time. And in fact, sleep paralysis and insomnia and having night terrors, right? This is sort of, again, existed in folklore, again, across cultures, not just here in the West, but you know, in Africa and Asia and the Middle East, you know, people often ascribe night terrors and sleep paralysis in ancient cultures and cultures around the globe to being some kind of access point to another reality or another version of reality. I know I'm Canadian, so in Canada we have, you know, a significant indigenous population, and one you know, aspect of a spiritual journey is to purposefully not sleep, is to purposefully stay awake for a long time and place yourself into incredibly uncomfortable situations to deprive yourself of sort of comfort and even sort of self-harm at times where, you know, often, you know, young men or young women and especially sort of more shamanistic practice would be literally cut yourself and burn yourself. And the idea is to, as you place yourself in more positions of discomfort, your mind opens itself to communicating with what they would refer to as the spirit world. And this practice still occurs. You know, sweat lodges are common practice, you know, in Canada where I'm from for Indigenous people, where you literally go into a tent and you just like sit in a hot tent for hours and hours and hours. And the idea is as you become uncomfortable, you know, the broader world opens up to you. There's something to be said for this. I mean, cultures have been doing this for a long time, and there's probably a good reason for it. It probably does open the mind to something beyond just, you know, the everyday reality we sort of exist in, the 9-to-5, driving to Starbucks and get your coffee reality. So, you know, I think your son, and I think that Project Oculus, and potentially, you know, the Edgar Mitchell Foundation and Kathy Martin's work, if that is the case, you know, if there are links here, you know, maybe we're dealing with something. Maybe we can potentially find some evidence to support the fact that people who are in these marginal states, these places of discomfort in their lives, are more open to strange experience. Right. It's definitely a place to go.
So along your thoughts, where do you think the Rendlesham Forest fits in? As far as, you know, I'm talking about the integrity of the witnesses, the people like
right.
Colonel Halt, who absolutely did not want this thing to get out at all. And you listen to him talk today, and it's pretty solid, you know, what he saw. Not to say he knew what he saw, but what do you think of cases like that and how he could have interpreted it or they could have, as a group witnesses?
You know, Rendlesham's a tough one to talk about. It's a tough one to talk about because at the end of the day, I'm still a bit of a skeptic. I'm not saying that Rendlesham didn't happen. I don't say that at all. I think that there's a lot of issues with the Rendlesham case from the witness standpoint. Some witnesses claim that, they interacted with alien beings and they saw them and they got into some sort of triangular object or they came out of one rather. And then some witnesses, say, we just sort of saw this light and, there's a lot of variation, I think, from witness testimony. As for Colonel Halt himself, who I think is probably one of the most reliable witnesses in the case, I think he definitely witnessed something anomalous. Again, I don't know what it was. The light flying around and the beams of light coming down and all that, the debunkers would say it's a lighthouse. I would argue it's not, because, I don't know how you confuse those things. But ultimately, I think you have someone who walked into a strange situation and was unable to explain the reality of what was going on. And on his tape recorder, he did the best he could.
All right, thanks so much. We'll be back next week with our guest from last week, Tiago, that we had a failed podcast. He'll be back next week. And thanks so much. And remember, you can support the show. Just visit podcastufo.com. That way you can listen to the entire shows plus all the archives in your media player. All right, remember to keep your eyes to the sky.